There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Monday. Glad to have you here in a couple hours of live local talk, and glad you're along. Coming up in hour number two, Public Safety Director of the City of Mobile, James Barber, is going to join us. Lots to talk about with tomorrow's City Council vote on the annexation vote. We'll get into that in hour number two. But it's great to welcome him back to the studio, and I honestly don't know. I want to say Attorney General Senator Sessions, but thanks for coming back. I don't know how I know properly Attorney General, but I called you Senator Sessions for so long that
you could try Jeff.
Okay, we'll do. I don't know if I can pull that off.
I like when people feel like they can approach you. So it's good to be with you. Congratulations on your good work here.
Thank you.
Good to be home in Mobile.
Yeah, it was so many years. We'll jump right into probably the middle of my questions, because it's a great transition from the last time you were on the show with me. And I started thinking back, and I've said this on the radio over the months, over the year. I said, what people are excited about with when President Trump was running, the planks of his platform were your planks. You said those things right here, sitting in that chair on this studio for the years of former President Obama. You laid it out.
Well, I believe in those things. I think to some degree our Republicans have been too slow to really be passionate and aggressive about it. And that's one of the things I feel like I contribute in the Senate. They got to get more steel in their spine. We've got to advocate more for standing up to China and protecting American manufacturing from unfair competition. We absolutely have a window of opportunity on immigration. Congress has done nothing to help the president. It's been very, very difficult. There are loopholes in the laws that have got to be closed. It's maddening for our Border Patrol officers and others trying to enforce the law. And that's got to be done. You know, I believe he'll win this election, and we'll have that opportunity as part of a mandate, perhaps. It could happen. And I do think we need to be, he's raising really good questions about not getting too deeply embedded in wars that never end in the Middle East. I think history shows us that that area is far more difficult than we wish it were.
Right.
And some of my hopeful dreams have ended in, you know, despair and death and huge financial costs. So we just got to be mature and wise about foreign policy. And he's asking the right questions.
Let's go back to how it felt to have, because you spoke on these planks of the platform. You talk about, okay, let's talk about illegal immigration. You would speak on this. You'd be here, or I'd watch you in the evenings. You'd be there at the Rotunda speaking in front of the cameras about this. And you talk, and yeah, you had some people on board in the Senate, but there were a lot of deaf ears on illegal immigration, even in the ranks of the Republicans, correct?
Well, yes.
Okay.
Frankly,
that's
they would sort of mouth the words, but when the chips were down, we did not have enough aggressive support to accomplish what I think could have been accomplished had we worked smartly. I've learned how the process works. I learned that you've got to advise the American people. The reason I talked so much and did that was because I learned that if you tell the American people what's actually happening, when the vote is coming, and don't do it the next day, I mean, they'll bring up votes. They'll announce a vote tomorrow, and it's gone, and nobody even knows what happened. So when you start fighting a bill over weeks, and the American people start getting focused. They want to end illegal immigration. They're sick of the lawlessness. Why aren't politicians doing anything about it? Then you can get some heat on them. Yes. What changes votes? You want to know what changes votes in Washington? Phones. Back the first time we stopped, and I led the fight to stop this amnesty bill,
right.
They shut the phone system in Washington down. So many phone calls came in. They were sending bricks and packages to build a wall. And
that's noticed.
That's what I've learned about legislation is not just sitting down with your colleagues and trying to explain the facts, but when they start feeling some heat back home,
mm-hmm.
and their phones are ringing off the hook and they don't have a very good answer, they start reevaluating what their position and what their vote might be.
Now, it's interesting because the exit polling in 2016, as people were coming out from voting for president, they were asking in a lot of different states, what was your issue? What brought you to the polls? And illegal immigration was like top of so many lists out there, something that I know you were all on board on, and you had some others, but it seemed like to probably insiders or what, it seemed like this is on down the list of importance. But the American people, when they came out from voting for president, were asked, well, what's your reasoning? And illegal immigration showed up. I mean, that was a tell. You sensed something maybe before the rest of the folks inside the Beltway did.
Well, yes. Look, what I believe so deeply was the American people were right. It's the politicians that were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You got special interest groups. A lot of the big business types want this cheap labor. A lot of left-wing groups want open borders. Some of our libertarians, quasi-called conservatives, but they're really libertarians, they believe in open borders.
Right.
I have debated them. Sanctuary cities, all of this stuff. Some of the Democrats think they've got a monumental group of new voters that are going to vote for them. All of this is. What's a great nation needs to have a lawful system of immigration. They need to be able to enforce the law. We admit 1.1 million people in America every year to permanent legal residence, the most generous country in the world by far, but we can't have this massive illegality. We want to have people apply to check their background, to make sure they're not criminals, consider who should get in, and let people in who will prosper and flourish in America, who love this country. That's we can identify them that way, and it only makes sense.
Yeah, it seems like so many things that we go through, things that you've been an advocate for or against, there are rule of law issues where it's having your cake and eating it too in Washington. And where the law says, and they can go to one constituency and say, oh, well, we got a law, we enforce this law against XYZ, but then they let it go on. They don't crack down, but the law's on the books, so they have it both ways.
Oh, we do that. It's happening too much. But with regard to immigration, what I've learned is that for people in Central America, they have no interest in what's on our books, what laws are on
right,
our books.
Right.
They got cell phones, they got friends in the United States, and they say, if you come on in, you don't need to come lawfully. You just come across the border, and if they catch you, they're going to release you into the country. You may never have to show up for trial, and you can live in Houston and Los Angeles with your cousin or whatever.
Right.
The way to win the battle is to start enforcing the law significantly, and then fewer people will attempt the journey. And then that number drops down, and you got more Border Patrol officers per illegal entry, and you drive the numbers down, and you're in a virtuous cycle, and you can reestablish a legality, which is what we need to do.
All right, coming back with Attorney General Senator Jeff Sessions right here on Midday Mobile.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Guest in studio, he's telling me just, Jeff, I can't. Attorney General Senator Jeff Sessions, and thanks for coming in. Thanks for being in.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
You know, you mentioned we're talking about illegal immigration before we went to the break, and so much discussion, not saying it's not important, but so much attention is put on physical barrier, Border Patrol, what's being done, you know, what can be done on the southern border. But you said it. It's a two-part deal. And if there weren't jobs here for illegal immigrants, they wouldn't be coming like this.
Yeah. Years ago, a person, professional in the law enforcement, Border Patrol, said it's the jobs magnet. If they can come and get a job, then there's a magnet for it. We had an example of a chicken plant in North Alabama that they had put up a sign in Mexico. You want jobs, come to Russellville, Alabama, I'm told.
That's blatant.
people, they knew they would be illegal. You had a shutdown recently in Mississippi plant. Mm-hmm. So if those things are tightened up, it does reduce the people that come here. They just make economic decisions a lot of times. It's simply, can I get in? Yes. Can I get in? Have to wait in my line? I don't need to wait. I can come illegally and I can get a job and I can work. So you have too much. I think that's the mentality that's got to be ended. And we can do it. We're close. A lot of people give up and think mm-hmm. it's not possible. But once we get on a virtuous cycle, we shut down the job availability and tighten the board and build a wall, close some of the legal loopholes. It doesn't take a lot, and boom, this thing can be turned around.
Okay, let's talk about your time as Attorney General and this focus on several things. How do you see your time as Attorney General? How do you feel about that period of time?
Well, you know, I spent 2.5 years in Mobile as an assistant United States Attorney in the Department of Justice, and then 12 years, President Reagan nominated me to be United States Attorney, and I served 12 years as the boss of the U.S. Attorney's Office here. And then I spent 20 years in the Senate Judiciary Committee with oversight of the Department of Justice. And so I really, when I got there, I felt more confident and more knowledgeable than I thought I would. Mm-hmm. It was almost coming home, and I knew some things we needed to do. In the last 2 years of the Obama administration, instead of homicide rates dropping, as they had for basically 30 years, they jumped 12% in 15, another 8% in 16. Violent crime went up both of those years. And I'm thinking, this is a threat. Mm-hmm. And I announced, crime is not going up under our watch. We're going to bring it down. And 17 homicides and violent crimes went down. They went down again in 18. They're going to go down again this year. Good law enforcement, properly applied, and the federal ability to help support state and local law enforcement, where 85% is.
Mm-hmm.
And I traveled all over the country. I met with all the sheriffs and chiefs of police. Yeah. And the reception was so great. I would tell them, We have your back. You have our thanks. We know whose side we're on. We're on law and order side. We are against the criminals. And it was just, they felt they had been ignored, disrespected, not understood. And it was such a wonderful feeling. So that was a great thing. We stood up for religious liberty. We intervened in 4 different cases protecting free speech on campus. And one, we flipped sides completely in 4 Obama-era cases and won all 4 in the court battles that occurred later. Leadership throughout the department were good conservative Federalist Society type people, and it was fabulous to see the great judges we were able to get approved. Thursday night, we had the Federalist Society, you know, the conservative mm-hmm. legal society, 3,000 people packed Union Station. Justice Kavanaugh spoke. Mitch McConnell described how many judges had been confirmed. It was just electric, because if we'd had another 4 years of Obama-type judges, we'd have a different judiciary. This is unbelievable. And we don't need a liberal senator, pro-activist judge senator representing the state of Alabama. Let me just tell you, that is unthinkable. So he needs to be defeated, and we need to have somebody there who's going to help the president appoint and confirm these high-quality judges.
All right. Speaking of this, those are successes in the AG's office. Is there anything left undone, anything that you wish with more time you could have accomplished?
Well, I think Attorney General Barr is continuing our law enforcement initiative. So I think that's going to continue. He is attuned to free speech degradation that's occurring on college campuses around the country.
That was interesting when what happened around your stop at Northwestern the other day.
Did you see that funny article about what did they say? They were traumatized by my mainstream Republican speech.
Yeah.
And then when the local student paper took pictures of the protesters and put it in the paper, they said they were traumatized again.
Yes, they were shown, yes.
It's just hilarious, almost. I mean, it's a mockery of free speech in America. True. So they could pound on the door there at Northwestern and scream, just squeals, high-pitched squeals right outside the door the whole time I spoke. And so they
but
believe
don't get
in
their
free speech,
published.
But I don't get to speak. I mean, they can squeal and disrupt a speech, but the former Attorney General of the United States can't even have a speech without being disrupted.
And that the paper apologizes as a journalism school, if anything, is the thing that was...
Yeah, we have a lack of understanding of the great principles in our Constitution, free speech and the free exercise of religion. Both are in the First Amendment. Actually, the free exercise of religion precedes free speech. And yet some of the cases that we intervened on involved people on campus being blocked from passing out religious materials in a respectful and quiet way.
Yeah, stuff's changed. I mean, college used to be a place to have your preconceived notions challenged, right?
Exactly. I thought we had that firmly established. And it's amazing the totalitarian left, their obsession with power and to suppressing dissent, attacking the very character of anybody who doesn't agree with them. This is an unhealthy, dangerous thing.
But that has become, it's not that it's brand new, it's come and gone like the tide, but I think the tide is higher than it has been, at least in my lifetime, that the rhetoric of the cults of personalities and attack of a person versus policy seems to dominate the discussion.
Well, it does, but I think 25 years ago even, intelligent, educated people did not believe that. But you've got scholars and professors virtually agreeing that you can curtail speech, you know, substantive speech on campus. It's pretty stunning. We got to push back. I mean, I made a number of speeches around the country, and since I've been in the last year, I've traveled and made 3 or 4 speeches at Amherst College, Minnesota. That was the worst. I mean, they just bought up all the tickets so conservatives couldn't get tickets. Hardly a whole lot of them couldn't, and then they shouted and disrupted the speech.
But there's a lot of people out there that are so scared, I guess, that somebody's going to hear something that will challenge or maybe change an opinion. They want to silence. If they don't like what they're hearing, let's shut it down. Let's shut it down. I don't want anybody else to hear this.
Yes, it's hard to believe. Are they so fragile that they can't respond? Let me tell you what a lot of the conservative bright lawyers I hired had come out of the Ivy League, a lot of them, they said they were sharper and better prepared because every day they had to defend their values in a very hostile environment. And these other side, that they're not used to thinking. When somebody challenges their ideas, they get very defensive and mean-spirited.
All right. When we're close to the bottom of the hour break, we come back. I'll ask you this one before we go to the break. Do you see President Trump getting reelected?
I do. Moody Analytics, which I always thought was pretty Democratic-leaning, does this study, and they have 3 scenarios. He won all 3, and one of them was a landslide. Unless there's a recession, they predict he will likely be reelected. I just think that he's talking about the issues American people care about: trade, immigration, jobs, and the economy is great. We've got the lowest unemployment in maybe ever. We've got the first time in 20 years wages are growing faster than inflation. For 20 years, the average worker's wages are either declined or stayed flat. And this is why people had problems and frustrations. They're not I don't think, jealous of somebody that makes a lot of money, but they'd like to see their incomes go up too.
Right, be able to keep up.
And that's a legitimate concern. Half of America makes less than $55,000 a year.
We'll talk about this when we come back. More with, I can't do it, Attorney General Senator Jeff Sessions.
Hey!
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Right, 1235 FM Talk 1065 and Midday Mobile on this Monday. Guest in the studio, Jeff Sessions. There we go. I did it. Gonna still throw AG and Senator on there and candidate for Senate again. And I'm going to ask you this. So many people, I'm sure, have asked you, why now? Why now? And I want to add to that, why get back in and why so close to qualifying date did you make your announcement? Why wouldn't you be way out in front? Why wouldn't we be doing this months ahead of time?
Well, I made up my mind that we were going to take some time off and clear my head and maybe my heart a little bit. And I think it through. So I'm at the qualifying date. It's a qualifying
Absolutely.
Date. I was within the time. And I truly believe that we have a window of opportunity to advance some of the issues you and I just talked about
mm-hmm.
that I believed in before Trump came.
Yep.
And that he's pushing them. And Congress has been dragging their feet, in my opinion. They should be more vigorous in supporting these positions that the American people believe in, and I guarantee you the people of Alabama want them.
Mm-hmm.
Good, strong trade policy, protecting our manufacturing, fixing the border, and those kind of issues. And I think, we don't need a potted plant in Washington. We need somebody who can seize the moment
mm-hmm.
and see if we can't get it done. Because if you let too many years go by, you lose the momentum and you may never get it done. So that's my belief that I asked the people of Alabama to give me the chance to serve them in Washington, and I've tried to be worthy of their confidence and try to advance the agenda they've believed in. And with President Trump, he's pushing. I mean, he makes people mad and he upsets them, but he is pushing. And we should welcome the new voters that he's brought into the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. We need to get our party leadership and members focused on actually delivering to those voters. And if we do, we can establish a conservative working group that may go on for quite a long time. If not, I mean, we could have these socialists get in there, which would be a total disaster for America. So that's my thinking about it. I'm going to serve. I don't have any ego of like I have to go back to my Senate seat. Not one bit. It's simply that maybe it would be so glorious to see great progress on these issues. It would just please me, and I think it would please people of Alabama.
I want to go through what seems to be you leave your office of the Senate, you go to the AG, extremely popular. Since then, and I have been having these conversations with folks, they seem to have soured some out there on you because of recusal, okay? I want you, because we've explained it here on this show, but none better than the man himself to explain why the recusal. Let people in Mobile, Baldwin counties understand the recusal. Why do you recuse?
Well, Sean, I'm sure you've explained it.
Not as good as you, so tell us.
My decision, I said why I did it and explained it, and I'll repeat it. But fundamentally, I want President Trump to succeed. It's not personal for me.
Right.
I mean, I have certain values and principles that I want to see advanced. So I didn't feel good about in a constant battle with the president arguing this case.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you, can you imagine what CNN and all the liberal media would love for me to do?
Oh, my gosh.
They were calling all the time.
Yeah.
They couldn't imagine why I wouldn't attack Trump and
mm-hmm.
create dissension and all that. Well, if you want him to succeed, you don't do that. So essentially, the regulation in the Department of Justice says that if you participate in a campaign, and I was a national defense guy, I drove with the president.
Right.
I was
you part of the campaign from here at Ladd People Stadium, and you put on the hat, right?
Yeah,
I remember
right
that day. You are part of the campaign.
But I had a title, and I traveled with the president. I was his transition co-director. I was in part of all of that. And I guess I would say I thought it was impossible for me to say the regulation didn't apply. And if the Attorney General of the United States won't apply plain regulations, how can he expect everybody else in this department?
You mean that it was based on rule of law?
Yeah, so it was a rule of law, and that was my best judgment. And the president didn't agree. But I'm not. That's in the past.
Right.
What we need to be focused on, and what I've got my head clear about, I think, it's not about the past. It's about what are we going to do in the future? Are we going to achieve some of the things that Alabamians want done? Or are we going to let this moment slip?
Okay.
And I feel like my experience.
Because I was saying, why you
ability to contribute to that?
Why you? That's the point. Because we'll have your competitors there in the Republican primary are saying, well, he had his chance. It's now our chance. The president soured on him. Why would you be more effective implementing? Although I know probably implementing these policies than any of the other seven. That would like to do this from the Republican side?
Well, there's several reasons. One is people know me nationally. It gives me a certain amount of more clout. Number two, I'm familiar with the Senate rules and procedure, and most of the chairmen were all there when I was a member of the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And thirdly, I know how to argue them. I know how to message them to the American people and explain them, and maybe we can get the public charged up. You're not going to do it. A potted plant is not going to get it done. You have got to work in the chamber to a degree with your members, but really, when the votes change, it's because phone calls come in, because they're feeling the heat back home. And you got to be able to stand up and message this. Go on talk shows, which mm-hmm. around the country, and I did it, immigration, mm-hmm. we did it, have these events, and they'd all come in, and we would message around the country. And people would call their senators and their congressmen. That's the way you move votes in Washington. I think we have a rare opportunity. And I think I could make a unique difference.
Let's talk about this.
I'll say this one more thing. I'm not afraid of them. They got nothing I got to have. I go into that Senate, and we're going to push for the values we believe in. And hopefully we might surprise ourselves that we can move this agenda better than some people think.
Well, you're arguing your efficacy at implementing that, because I would imagine that if we heard from all the other people on the Republican side, they'd all say, I support everything the president wants to do. But you're saying beyond that.
Well, it hadn't happened.
It hadn't happened,
and I don't see enough activity about it. I just have to be frank. I'm honest about that. The Republican leadership, the Democrats are just hate Trump.
They block that.
Do everything they can possibly do to stop him. But we need more vigor on our side in pushing back. And if we do, and we bring up these bills, and they block closing loopholes of illegal immigration, they might find themselves in trouble. Maybe a Republican would win that Senate seat next time.
I want to talk about the president's attacks and tweets on you over time, and how that you've mentioned it a couple of times that you had a chance, you had CNN and every other network would have had you on. They would have wanted you to do a tell-all book. You did none of those things, even though you're getting attacks from the president. First of all, how do you deal with that? And second of all, why do you deal with that?
Well, I don't see it. I'm at this because of beliefs that I think is good for the country. I try to make sure that you got your head right and your heart right.
Mm-hmm.
What are we doing? Is it going to help make America a better place? I believe Donald Trump, only he could have won that last election. None of the candidates were close to winning Ohio, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, those upper Midwest states without which you do not win.
Right.
And so first, he was a winner. Secondly, he's been true to the promises. I did worry. A lot of people worried. Well, he might not be he might say this to get elected, but he might not. When he cut taxes, he cut regulations, he appointed great judges, he's pushed to make end the lawlessness at the border, he stood up to China. Everything he promised to do. Moved to Jerusalem, the embassy.
He went down
Israel.
The list, yeah.
Yeah, the whole, all of that. So I would just say that I'm not going to let it be personal with me. He's been true to the agenda he promised, and I want to help that agenda succeed.
I mean, am I stepping too far and saying the agenda is more important than any arrows you've taken?
Well, I've explained it my way. I think that's the most important thing. That's what I've given a large part of my effort and life to. I believe
this is your agenda. Yeah. I mean, Frank, this is the agenda. I said it before. You talked about it and talked about it, and I saw it coalesce in planks of a platform of a Donald J. Trump.
Yeah, it was remarkable. Now, I got to say, I think he believed that. I think he's been a critic of trade negotiations before he ran for president. He bought an ad in the New York Times calling for the death penalty in New York for murderers. That's not a politically correct thing to do.
Right,
that was 20 years ago.
Right.
So the man had certain values that I don't sense he's abandoned them. And his promises he's delivered on. So I'd like to see him be reelected. And mostly, I'd like to see him be reelected so that he can accomplish what I think our Alabama people long for. I believe we can do it. We're not against trade, but we want fair trade. We're not against all immigration, but we want lawful immigration. We want to be careful about sending our troops abroad. They need to be absolutely certain that that's the smart thing to do. Those are just some of the things that he's done very well, and I'd like to see him continue to be successful.
All right, coming right back, more of our conversation. I want to ask about, from a perspective of a senator, with what is happening in the House, and does this impeachment proceeding go to the Senate? What does it look like? Kind of give us an insider perspective on what you think will happen up there. Coming right back, more of Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Guest in studio, former Attorney General, former Senator and candidate for Senate on the Republican side. Imagine that. Jeff Sessions in studio. And also, if people want to get information, I feel silly saying this to you. If they want to get information about getting to know you, Jeff Sessions, where do they go online? Is there anywhere?
Well, we do have jeffsessions.com, and that's the simple best place to start. So I think I would recommend that to anybody.
You go down through, I mean, the planks of your platform have to be very similar, I'm guessing, to the planks of the platform last time you sat in that chair here in the studio.
I haven't changed.
Right.
You know, I mean, you should change. I have changed a little bit over the 20 years. In other words, I'm a little more. I supported our troops in Iraq and Afghanistan absolutely to the core. But now I'm more cautious about sending them and asking them to do something that may not be possible for them to do, create a whole new government in some country, and it's going to become our responsibility when it may be, you know, it take a century to see that happen. So we just got to be careful. But I always believed in trade, and we in Mobile believe in trade.
Right.
But you can't allow a country like China, who's a strategic threat, to cheat and access our market unfairly.
Right.
Mitt Romney, if he'd said this in November, he'd have gotten elected. But in the primary in Iowa, when he was first running, he said, if you don't stand up to China, they'll run over you. Right? If you stand up to them, they will say you're starting a trade war, which they did as soon as Trump did. And then he said, but we're in a trade war. We're just not fighting. And then he said the most important thing. China has a lot more to lose than we do. We can buy products from all kinds of places. We can even make them here. But they need our market. They have this $500 billion manufacturing surplus shipping to us. And if they lose all that, it's going to be very damaging. So the president has leverage if we'll just back him and don't undermine his leverage and take it away and weaken him before China thinks that the farmers and the other people are going to pressure the president. He might lose the next election, and then they'll hang on and they won't have to change.
Well,
but
they play a long game.
They play a long game
in China.
They can't do without a market. Without being able to sell all they're selling in the United States, this will hurt them badly, and it will not be so hurt us so badly. So Romney didn't pursue that and take that case to the American people in November. I think it would have helped him had he done so, but I thought his analysis sticks in my mind to this day.
What do you say back here at home? So we think about this, and I have people call, and actually they will stand with the president in this policy, but I'm thinking right here in Mobile, let's look at the port, let's look at trade here, let's go up the road, let's look at the international companies that are here, whether they're automotive manufacturing or steel or chemical or whatever, or airplanes. What do you say to them?
I say to them that many of these, most of these companies are European and or others, and they're less abusive than China.
You're not
most
saying,
of them
wait
play
a second,
by
wait
the
second,
rules.
You didn't say not completely, just less abusive than
well,
China.
Well, you can say what you want to about free markets and free trade, but the Asians tend to be mercantilist. That is, their goal is always to sell more to us and buy less.
Mm-hmm.
It's just their instinctive behavior, and you have to be realistic about it. But Europeans are a little better. But Japan and South Korea are pretty good partners, you know. I voted for the trade agreements that I think are helpful. But I think it's time now. We've got to stand up. It's not going to cause Airbus to leave Mobile. And most of this tension is with the Pacific countries.
I remember way back you were a vocal opponent to this thing called the TPP.
Yes. The TPP is a Trans-Pacific Partnership. We would all meet in some, the theory was we would have a conference and everybody would have one vote. The mm-hmm. Sultan of Brunei would have one vote and the President of the United States would have one vote, like some watered down European Union. And while the British are trying to get out of the European Union, they've learned their lesson. And we didn't need, the worst thing we ever could have done was join that one. So they had it in secret down in the basement. Nobody could make it public. I highlighted all that. And I was a lone voice, but pretty soon the tide began to turn about it because we educated the American people about what it was. And then after President Trump came in and got the nomination, really before he did, said, this thing is dead, I'm pulling it. It was the Obama-negotiated TPP. And he said, we're going to end it. And then later on, Hillary Clinton gradually came along and said she was against it, too. So the whole thing was dead. But they got the first vote was 60-something votes in the Senate. I mean, this was on the road to passage. It just taught me that if you take your case to the American people and you honestly tell what's in a bill or mm-hmm. why it's needed, and you can move public opinion and you can stop bad bills and you can pass good bills.
All right, as we're closing here, this is going on. They're back to on TV tomorrow with the impeachment hearings in the House. Eventually, I guess, does it go to the Senate? I mean, what's your take on it right now?
Well, the word is that the Democrats are just going to pass it. They don't care what's in it, what the facts are. I have referred to it as a show trial. A show trial is where you decide the person is guilty and you want to punish them, and then you have a trial.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what it appears to be. But I'm encouraging, urging the Democrats, don't do this. This is no little matter.
Mm-hmm.
You're creating a precedent for impeachment that can be corrosive to our constitutional order. Impeachment is not anything the Congress says. Gerald Ford once said that. That's ridiculous. Constitution says you impeach upon conviction of treason, bribery, or high crimes and misdemeanors. Those words mean something.
Mm-hmm.
They may not be totally exact, but they mean that you should have proof of something serious, not a political disagreement, not a foreign policy disagreement. And it's just Ken Starr, who was the former, you know, counsel.
Because you were in the Senate during the
impeachment of Clinton. He had three cases that were like perjury and obstruction of justice, of which he could be convicted beyond a reasonable doubt by a jury. I don't see any crime here that the president can be convicted of, any crime, at least that I can see. And so usually what they promise is going to occur, as did happen with Russia, when the facts all came out, it was less than they said. And I suspect the same thing's going to happen here. All this promises, you know, the president did this, that, and the other. When the facts come out, it probably won't be as what they say. So I just feel like that we're, as Ken Starr said, we're in impeachment land.
Mm-hmm.
We just moved into impeachment land. We go from a disagreement that ought to be settled by congressional oversight and political campaigns.
Right.
To translate to impeachment land, where we're talking about impeaching the president of the United States. He was duly elected.
Could we, in just a minute left here, could we be in a cycle here where going forward this is used as a, like a, almost at the level of just a filibuster, that this is the new weapon against the executive branch?
That is the danger. That's a good insight. I think that is true. This is not a healthy thing. We got in a bad habit of wanting to prosecute our enemies, both sides,
mm-hmm.
Republicans and Democrats. They get mad at somebody, want them to prosecute them.
That's right.
But you don't need to be throwing the criminal charges around like that, and you sure don't need to be throwing around the awesome power of impeachment without the strongest basis. Jonathan Turley, a professor that I admire, and he's testified many times in Congress, he said this impeachment is founded on the narrowest basis of any impeachment in the history of America. It has the most one phone call, essentially,
mm-hmm.
One matter. And he thinks that, you know, it's not going to happen. The Senate's not going to vote to impeach. And so we're going to spend weeks and months when we could be fixing the border. We can fix our trade policy, maybe passing the much-improved NAFTA, the Canadian-Mexican-American agreement. That's much better for America than the old one. Mm-hmm. We need to get that done. Maybe it's not perfect yet, but it's all darn better. That's the kind of thing Congress should be spending its time on.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Jeff Sessions, of course, you can, you know the name, but if you get more information, it is online, and we'll talk to you again very, very soon. 12:59, coming right back, hour number two of Midday Mobile. A public safety director of the city of Mobile, James Barber, joins us next.